We are holding on Nem Armored Days, about the middle of the wide line, while we've been shelving it. So, we started talking about the matter of warming up or heating up liquids on Shabbos, water or oil. We had a three-way machlokas tanoim, and we had a two-way machlokas amoroim, how to understand that machlokas tanoim. The bottom line we said is that if you're warming up something beyond two or above Yad Tzila Desboi on Shabbos, then it's osur, but if it's below Yad Tzila Desboi, then it's mutter. We also touched on the matter of Kli Rishon versus Kli Sheni, which now we're going to get into a little more detail about that. So the Gemara says, "Amar Yitzchak Bar Avdimi, Tam Achas Nichnasti Achar Rebbe LeBeit HaMeshech. One time on Shabbos, I followed Rebbe into the bathhouse. Now, we learned before that you're not allowed to bathe in a bathhouse on Shabbos, Zera D'Rabbanan. However, we also learned that at one point, as when the Chachamim were making Zeras in this connection, we said they made a Zera also on going to the hot springs of Tveria, and then people couldn't stand that because they needed something to be able to bathe in hot water on Shabbos. So they allowed them to bathe in the hot springs of Tveria, and that they still left in place the Zera that you're not allowed to bathe or to sweat in a regular bathhouse. So this was in the hot springs of Tveria. So therefore, he was allowed to be there on Shabbos. And the Yitzchak Bar Avdimi says he was a Talmud of Rebbe, Ubikashti laniach letach shel shemen ba'ambati. I wanted to put a jug of oil for him in the bath where they had. There was a bath or a hole in the ground or whatever where there was warm water, where the hot water would come there from the springs and collect there in a pool in the ground. So he wanted to put a jug of oil in there so it should warm up a little bit, and that way Rebbe could use it to smear on his skin before the bath. Or actually says Tosfos later on says after the bath, whatever. It was a normal thing as part of the bathing process to smear oil on your skin. We discussed the other day that there's no problem smearing oil on Shabbos because it's not thick enough to have the malacha of the machek. So therefore, but the point is, this oil was cold, and Rabbi wanted to warm it up a little bit before Rebbe would use it. But Omerli, so Rebbe said to me, toil the klisheni, take some of the hot water from the pool in the ground, put it into a klisheni, the tane, and then you can put the jar, then you can put the jug of oil into that. So the Gemara says, shmamina flat. So we see, in other words, the point is, don't put it into the pool itself, because that's like a Kli Rishon. You have there's the actual source of the water itself, which would be considered like it's on the fire. Then you have the pool that water goes into, which would be like a Kli Rishon. And then even if it's not on the fire right now, therefore, and then if you pour it into another keli, then it'll be a Kli Sheni. So the Gemara says Shmamina Tzlas. So therefore, you can derive three halachas from this little story. Shmamina Shemen Yeshva Mishum Bishul. Number one, we see that oil is subject to cooking. Not like we learned before. We had Rabba and Rav Yosef's understanding of the Tanakama in Braisa that we brought earlier on the Amud, that oil is not subject to the dinim of Bishul because there's no real difference in it before and after it gets warmed up. So now we see from the story not so, because otherwise Rebbe would have allowed Rebbe Yitzchak Bar Avdimi to put the oil directly into the pool in the ground. Number two, Ushmamina Kli Sheni Einim Abashol. Number two, you see that a Kli Sheni is not considered hot enough to cook something that's in it. Now, Tosfos asks the question, why should that be a difference? I mean, if the temperature of the contents of the Kli Rishon is the same as the temperature of the contents as the temperature of the content of the Kli Sheni, why would we say that a Kli Rishon is considered that it cooks on Shabbos and a Kli Sheni does not? Tosfos says the reason is it's true. The actual water or whatever it is in the Kli Sheni might, at least for the moment, be the same temperature as in the Kli Rishon, but the difference is because the Kli Rishon, by definition, the Kli Rishon is something that was on the fire previously, therefore the walls of it retain heat. Therefore, it retains its heat for much longer, and therefore it's capable of cooking something that you put inside it. As opposed to a Kli Sheni, fine, you may pour hot water into a Kli Sheni, and momentarily that water will be hot. But because the walls of the keli are cold, then therefore the water or whatever it is that you put in it is going to cool off fairly rapidly, and therefore it's not really going to have an opportunity to cook whatever you put in it. Now, we did talk about the other day.
Sorry to interrupt you.
One second. We did mention the other day, though, that with that said, the fact is there are things, according to many Poskim, that do cook even in a cliche. We talked about, for example, the other day, we mentioned something about a certain kind of fish, for example, which has a very soft skin, and therefore it cooks very easily. So you have certain kinds of things that are considered, that we consider that they cook even in a cliche. They're called kalei habishul. These are called things that cook very easily. Now, in our Gemara, we see clearly from our Gemara that water and oil are not in that category. However, most other foods, we always have a suffix whether they are kalei habishul or not. Therefore, practically speaking, we have the din that most things you're not allowed to put into a klisheni either, assuming, of course, that it's more than Yad Zalad Isbay. If it's less than Yad Zalad Isbay, of course, there's nothing to talk about. But if the klisheni is Yad Zalad Isbay, most things you're not allowed to put in there either for the same reason, because they might be kalei habishul. They might be among those things that cook easily enough, even in a klisheni, and therefore you have a problem. I mean, there's details about it in Shulchan Aruch, for example. There's details, you know, we say ein bishul ach bishul. So, for example, certain kinds of salt. You have two different kinds of salt, right? You have salt that you get from the ocean by evaporating, which is basically cooking it. So then we might say ein bishul ach bishul, and they have the kind of salt that they get from salt mines where that wouldn't apply. So with the first kind of salt, then you might have less of an issue of putting out on a klisheni, because even if it cooks, then fine, it's ein bishul ach bishul anyway. And there are somewhat complex dinim about that in Shulchan Aruch. Now, if you wanted to ask something, if something from that wasn't clear, then go ahead and ask.
Yeah, I was about to ask you something in that line of explanation that, number one, on the temperature of the keli sheni, but you've answered that. And number two, other than oil, what is cooking in a keli sheni? What type of food could you cook in a keli sheni? It's considered cooking in a keli sheni.
Well, let's say, for example, you have questions. Let's say, for example, if you want to put salt or sugar or croutons or you want to put tea or coffee or whatever into a keli sheni, so you have real problems with that, because any of those things, most of those things, again, we see from our Gemara that wine, that water and oil are not kalei habishul. Therefore, you're allowed to put them in a keli sheni. But most other things, we don't know. We don't have a clear definition of what are kalei habishul and what are not. And therefore, we have to be machmir on most things other than water and oil, and not put them in a keli sheni. Again, if the keli sheni is Yad Zalad Isbay.
Anything like milk, like coffee,
tea, croutons and soup, salt, sugar, all these kinds of things. Yeah. Certain things. Again, you have certain things for which there are heterin, because again, there are things that were previously cooked. For example, certain kinds of salt, certain kinds of sugar, maybe also, because sugar is cooked as part of the process of making it. So then maybe you have heterin with those. Although again, you know, the Alter Rebbe talks about, for example, it's not so simple, because even if it was previously cooked, if now it's a solid and then it's becoming a liquid again, maybe you have issues. So it gets a little bit complicated in Shulchan Aruch. We're not going to get into all the detailed dinim of it. And to tell you the truth, I'm not sure of all the detailed dinim of it myself. But in general, you have many times there's an issue with putting things into a cliche.
All right. You mentioned croutons. Croutons in soup Friday night. Is there an issue with putting croutons into a bowl of soup after it's dished out, which is going into a bowl?
Right, so that's the thing. Once it's in a bowl, it's in a cliche. So then the question becomes, are croutons one of those things that are kalei habishul? So it's really not so simple, basically. So I'm not actually sure about the details of the dinim. I myself don't like croutons in my soup, so I don't really care one way or the other. It gets a little bit complicated. Maybe we'll talk about it. I mean, we're still going to be talking about bishul over the next day or two. So Bleneder, I'll try to look up some of the relevant dinim.
Right. I remember once people saying, you know, wait till it cools down, then put the croutons in. So maybe
that's the best thing. Obviously.
That's right.
If you wait till it's below Yom Tov Esrei, then of course you have no problem at all. Sure.
Right. And croutons might be a lot of croutons are actually baked and fried before
that may or may not help because you have the question is we say in dishel achav dishel, but is there dishel after afia? Can it be considered that if something was baked and now you're going to be cooking it on Shabbos, would that be considered cooking or not? You have two opinions about it in Shulchan Aruch.
Okay.
And in fact, the Amos says that we're not. So you have. I mean, different croutons are made different ways also. Some of them are baked. Some of them are deep fried. So if they're fried, then okay. Then okay. Then it's a bishul acha bishul maybe. But yeah.
Okay. No, I'm talking about the yellow croutons that we use usually.
The yellow croutons, I think, are fried. So in that case,
fried.
It might be allowed. But the question you also have to deal with the question really, and there's a bit of discussion about this. For example, I mean, you don't pour directly from the pot into the bowl. After all, you take from the pot
the
and then you pour that into the bowl. So is the bowl then maybe considered a klishlishi or not?
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. So that's another consideration as well. So Bli Nedar, I'll look up some halachas about it before we next learn.
Okay.
Yad Soledes Boy. When do you know it's Yad Soledes Boy?
So we talked before Yom Tov. We talked that in the Gemara's definition of it is if it's hot enough that if it landed on a baby's stomach it would scald him. The official definition of Yad Soledes Boy is so hot that your hand would recoil automatically from touching it. But what that is, it's not so clear because after all, the Gemara is not giving a temperature. So you have the general, many poskim hold that Yad Soledes Esrei is around 113 Fahrenheit. So if it's hotter than that, hotter than about 113 Fahrenheit, then you get into the question. If it's below that, most poskim will say there's no problem with it. Okay, let's go on. So the question is, the Gemara asks, okay, so you're saying, so we learned three halachas from this little story of Rebbe and his Talmud, Rebbe Yitzchak Avdin. But we have to ask, Heichi Ovid Hachas, how could Rebbe do that to tell Rebbe Yitzchak Avdin in a bathhouse a halacha? But Omer Rabbi Baba Chana, Omer Rabbi Yechanan, didn't Rabbi Baba Chana say in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, B'chol Mokam Mutal Harher, anywhere, you're allowed to think words of Torah, except for a bathhouse or a bathroom. You're not allowed to think words of Torah in there. You're not even allowed to think words of Torah. You're certainly not allowed to say words of Torah, like a halacha. So how could Rebbe say that? In other words, the question is not obviously Rebbe should allow Rebbe Yitzchak Avdimi to do an Easter, but he should tell him using a different way of saying it, instead of telling him, put it in a klisheni, he could say something like, I don't need it, or something. I don't need you to put it into the thing over there, whatever. Why is he saying it in a way from which you're seeing a clear halacha? The chitema, so you might answer, the lashon chol amalei, maybe Rebbe did not say the words to Rebbe Yitzchak Avdimi in lashon kodesh, maybe he said it to him in some foreign language, and maybe the whole issue of thinking or speaking words of Torah in the bathroom or the bathhouse is only when you're doing it in lashon kodesh. It's interesting, by the way, Tosfos mentions the point so maybe you could say he was thinking in a Lashon Chol also. Maybe he was thinking in a foreign language. Maybe the Gemara is assuming that would be Mutter, although it's an interesting point because we talked before in Brachos, the Rashba mentions over there, and it's brought in various places in Siddur, that thinking doesn't involve any language at all. When you think something, you're not really thinking until you think the actual words you're going to speak, the actual concept that you're thinking of is not really in any particular language. So maybe Tosfos is talking about the later stage of thinking when you're thinking how to actually phrase it, then that already is obviously in some language. Anyway, so you're going to say that maybe this kind of thought is mutter it, because it's in Lashon Chol and it's speaking. No, Ba'amar Abaya. Abaya said, Dvorim shel chol mutter la'omen b'lashon kodesh. Mundane matters, non-Torah matters, you're allowed to say them in the bathhouse even in Lashon Kodesh, but things of Kedusha, like a halacha or words of Torah or whatever, you're not even allowed to say in a foreign language. So in other words, in short, you would be allowed to speak Lashon Kodesh in the bathhouse if you're just talking about how the weather, you know, we're talking about what the weather is or whatever, but you wouldn't be allowed to speak in English in the bathhouse if you're talking about words of Torah. So that we're back to the question, how did Rebbe say to the Yitzchak Avdimi something which amounts to a halacha? The Gemara answers, Achrushi me isura shayim. It's different when it comes to preventing a person from doing an issur. Then you're allowed to even say something, which is a halacha, in order to prevent him from saying it. And the point is that a number of Rishonim say, so still, I mean, we started with the question of why did Rebbe not say differently? But the answer is, because let's say Rebbe had said something, for example, let's say he said, I don't need it, then Rebbe Yitzchak would think, okay, Rebbe doesn't need it, but still he wouldn't mind if I do it. So therefore, Rebbe had to say it somehow, unequivocally, to make it absolutely clear that Rebbe Yitzchak Rabbeinu shouldn't try doing it on his own. Okay. The Gemara says, Teda. In fact, we can prove this from a different story. The Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, Maisha the Talmud of Rav Meir Shenichnas Achar Levet HaMelchut. It happened once that a Talmud of Rav Meir followed his Rebbe, Rav Meir, into the bathhouse. Ubikish lahadiach karka. He wanted to rinse off the bottom of the tub for Rav Meir, because like this, many people bathe in it. It gets dirty. So Meiri describes that the way they would do it is they would block off the inlet so no water was coming in there. They would clean it out, maybe perfume it and whatever, and then open up the water and let it flow in again. So the Talmud wanted to do that for the mayor, but Amaloi ain medichin, and the mayor says you're not allowed to do that because the bottom of this pool or tub or whatever it is that we're dealing with over here is made out of dirt, and there's a problem. You may smooth out the hole in the ground over there, and that would be a tolda of the malacha of boina, of building on Shabbos. So you can't do that. Then lost the chloi karka, so the Talmud instead wanted, okay, even if I can't clean it, even if I can't rinse it with water, I want to at least pour some kind of perfume or something on it to make it good for the mayor. Amalai ein sochin, and the mayor told him, you can't do that either. You can't pour any kind of thing on the ground, on that on Shabbos, for the same reason, because there might be holes and different bumps and holes and whatever in the ground. Now, mind you, here it's not actually a dirt floor. Here it's in a bathhouse. The bottom of the pool that we're talking about is not necessarily dirt. It's tiles or something. It's tiles or stones or whatever. But still, there's still the Chachamim made a gzera because you still might confuse one kind of floor with the other. We had a similar concept in the second parak when you had somebody was sweeping a floor in an attic. And he was told, and I think it was actually the same Rabbi Yitzchak Rabbeinu, told him not to do that. So the same thing over here, the mayor is telling the Talmud not to do that in the bathhouse, even though it's not a dirt floor. Alma, so we see from that description, Afrushin is sort of shiny, that there's a difference between telling somebody not to do something which would be an iser. And again, it's not, Rav Meir couldn't have told him you don't have to do that or something like that for the same reason, because then the Talmud might misunderstand and think, okay, Rebbe doesn't require me to do it, but he doesn't mind if I do it. So therefore, Rav Meir has to tell him outright, ein medichin or ein sochin, even though that is a halacha, you're not allowed to rinse or you're not allowed to put oil or whatever, or perfume or whatever on it, because otherwise there was no way that he could, otherwise there was no way to make it clear that he shouldn't do it. So we see that when it comes, we see that when it comes to telling somebody to prevent somebody from doing an issur, you're allowed to tell him even if you're saying a halacha. Okay. So Hochanami says Alman Afrushi the Isura Shiny. So we see it's different when you're telling somebody to stay away from doing anything. So Hochanami, the same thing. In the story of Rebbe, La Afrushi the Isura Shiny, it's different when he's telling him to stay away from anything. Okay. Amar Ravina. So Ravina says, by the way, from the story with Rebbe about the oil and the Klisheni, Shmamino, you see from that, Hamavasha, Bachamis, Veri, Bashabas Chayas. You see from that, says Ravina, that if a person were to cook something using the hot springs of Tveria on Shabbos, then he would be chayev. It would actually be chayev. We're assuming that chayev means chayev d'araisa. Why? D'amaisa de Rebbe la'achav zera haba, because this story with Rebbe happened after they had made the gzera not to bathe in a bathhouse. We learned before about the various stages of the gzera. So, in particular, we talked about before that there was a stage at much earlier where they had made a gzeira that you're not allowed to bathe in a bathhouse on Shabbos. We said because you had the bathhouse attendants that were heating it up and claiming they did it before Shabbos. Then later on, the Chachamim found it necessary to ask for also sweating in the bathhouse. So this story happened after Rechitza was also happened after already they had said. I skipped a couple of lines before. Sorry, Shemam and Aplas. We said we learned three things from the story of Rebbe. Shemen Yeshva Isu Mishum Bishul. Number one, oil is subject to the dinim of Bishul. We're going back a few lines that I left out over there. Oh, Shemam and Aplas Sheni Enim of Vashul. That's where we left out. So we left off. We were talking about Klisheni, and I forgot to say the last part over there. You see that Klisheni does not cook. Oh, Shemam, we left off. Hefsherei Zehu Bishulai. That warming up oil is the equivalent of cooking it, because over here, Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avgimi, he wasn't planning to cook the oil. He wasn't planning to let it to reach a high temperature. He just wanted to warm it up a little. And still, Rebbe told him that it's also. Okay. You have actually, in that case, it should be also in a Klik Sheni as well. There are actually Rishonim who have a Girsa that the Gemara says, Hashedah Shal Shemin Loi Dehu Bisholai, that warming it up is not the equivalent of cooking it, but nevertheless, if it reaches Yad Saladis, well, you still have a problem. What Rashi means, one possibility means maybe it's only off the Rabbanan. All right, so now we're turning to where we were in the Gemara. Sorry. We see that if a person cooks something with the hot springs of Tveria on Shabbos, then he's chayev. Because this whole story of Rebbe was after they had made the gzera not to bathe in a bathhouse on Shabbos, although it was still before the time, based on the Gemara in Brachos, tells us that it was actually before the time when they made the gzera about sweating in there. Actually, Rashi over here says differently. Rashi says it was even after the gzera of sweating, but whatever it is, the point is that it was definitely after it was also to bathe in the bathhouse, and it's only mutter to do it in the hot springs of Tveria.
So why did Rebbe go there on Shabbos then?
Because since it was the hot springs of Tveria, and you're allowed to go there on Shabbos, so Rebbe went there.
Just to walk, you mean not to go bathe, just to walk around the area?
No. We're saying he actually went in there to bathe. That's the point. In other words, he actually went in there to bathe. That's why Rabbi Kufar Jimmy wanted to warm up oil for him, so that way he could smear the oil on his skin before or after the bath, which is the usual way of doing things.
So this was after the final gzera.
So that's the thing. It's interesting. There's a Gemara in Brachos that mentions in a different context that mentions Rebbe going into a bathhouse. And the Gemara explains over there that he had gone in there in order to sweat, and that this was before the gzera of that you're not allowed to go in there to sweat on Shabbos. Over here in the Gemara, Rashi makes the point that it was actually after the gzera on Zaya as well. That the only thing at that point was mutter was to go into the hot springs of Tveria, as we said. So one possibility is the Tanei Yeshua, a couple of other Achronim talk about, is that Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avgimi was one of the younger Talmidim of Rebbe. Therefore, it's likely that this was later in Rebbe's life after they had made that Zera about sweating as well. So in other words, this story versus the one in Brachos would have been two different times in Rebbe's lifetime. The other one in Brachos would have been earlier, when it was also to bathe in there but not to sweat. And this one would have been after it was also to sweat already as well. But the only thing that was mutter is the hot springs of Tveria. So by elimination, the only place this could have been is in the hot springs of Tveria. There's no possibility it could have been anywhere else, because already everything else was also at that point.
So the only reason why the Chametz Tveria is mutter is because it's not heated up by a fire. It's from the underground, natural.
That, but also we said because the Chachamim found that it's Gzeder She'en Reva Tzivu Yechol
Ha'am. Right.
Couldn't stand it, should not have any place at all where they could bathe in hot water on Shabbos. That's right.
That's what's hot over there, yeah.
Right. So the point is, so it obviously by elimination it was in the hot springs of Tveria, because there's no place else that Rebbe could have been at that point. But Amar Lei Tov Klisheni B'Tein, and we still see that Rebbe tells Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avgimi to put the oil into a Klisheni. So we see that even though if he had put it into the pool in the ground where the hot springs water was going, it would only be Chametz Tveria. Nevertheless, we see that it would be also Daraisa. So the question is, Aini, is that so? Didn't Rav Chista say that if a person cooks something using the hot springs of Tveria on Shabbos, he would be potter, meaning it's only also Drabbanon? The answer is, you're right. My chayev nami dekaomar makas mardus. You're right. When Ravina uses the expression chayev, he doesn't actually mean chayev daraisa, that he'd be chayev skila if it was with Eidim Vasra, or chafas if it was b'shergim. He means that he's chayev, in other words, that he's chayev makas mardus, he's chayev malkas derabbanon for being over on an iso derabbanon. But you're right, he wouldn't actually have been over on an iso daraisa, and therefore, so, and like what Chista is saying, it's only also derabbanon. Because again, as we said the other day, it's not heated up by fire, it's heated up by underground processes, right? Okay.
It's just interesting that he had to put the water for the oil in Kli Sheni, if they're sitting in a Kli Rishon and they're not getting burned, so it's kind of confusing, you know, they're actually sitting in the Tveria.
Well, first of all, they themselves are not necessarily sitting directly in the hot water either. They may well have been sitting in a pool that had some cold water mixed in there also. But you know what? You also have, though, sometimes people can sit in hot water that is, you know, you have even nowadays, people have hot jobs, for example, or you have nowadays hot springs in various places, some of which are hotter than Yad Salah Disroy, and you still have that, and you still have that people sit in them. You can't sit in them for very long, granted, but you can sit in them for a little bit. So it still could have been.
If they couldn't be in a place that was heated up with coals, why can we be in a place that's heated with electricity, whether it's a mikveh or something else? What's the difference?
It's what we talked about the other day, the possibility that we talked about what the Kovid Nasanel says, that the Gzera was never meant to apply to mikvehs. And that's it. Other than that, we're allowed to be in places that are heated up on Shabbos. We're just not allowed to bathe in hot water on Shabbos. The Chacham didn't say that you're not allowed to be in a place that's heated up. We're not like the Koroim where we sit in cold houses on Shabbos.
But the risk of being tempted to heat is just as great.
No, the Chachamim were concerned with this thing with the bathhouses because you had actually people who were heating them up on Shabbos and claiming that they did it before Shabbos. The fact that a person has heat in their house, we make various zeros about it, but we can't prevent a person from heating up their house on Shabbos. We have to say, you know, like we said at the end of the first parak, if you're going to light a bonfire, for example, okay, you have to make sure that most of it has caught before Shabbos, so you're not going to feel the need to stir it up or whatever. But we can't. And you know, again, it would be a zeta shein reva sima yecholam lamed, but to say that nobody can have or to say that nobody can heat can have their house heated on Shabbos, it would never work. All right, let's go on. Since we're mentioning something about bathing in a bathhouse on Shabbos, so the Gemara, by the way, mentioned something else, a couple of other things involving bathing. Amar Rav Zera says, "Ano chazise l'rabbohu." I once saw Rabbahu deshot ba'ambati. He was floating in one of these in-ground pools on Shabbos. So again, we're talking about either it was at the hot springs of Tveria or it was a cold pool. And we said before we had the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that you can't even rinse off in cold water on Shabbos, but we said the halacha is not like him. You actually are technically allowed to, although again, the minhag nowadays is not to bathe or shower even in cold water on Shabbos, but technically it is allowed. So either it was a cold pool or it was one of the hot springs of Australia. Anyway, the point is that Zeta saw, I saw him kind of floating in there. I don't know, though, whether he actually lifted his feet off the ground and actually was swimming there or maybe not. Now, we have a Zeta Dirabon. Aside from everything we've been talking about not bathing in hot water on Shabbos, there's a different Zeta Dirabonon that you're not allowed to swim on Shabbos, even if it's in cold water, even if it's a river or a lake or what have you. There's a Zeta Dirabonon that you're not allowed to swim on Shabbos, the reason being because the Chachamim were concerned that you might make what's called Chavit Shel Shayotin, basically a flotation device. You may not know how to swim so well. You may find it necessary to make a flotation device, and then of course that would be also on Shabbos. So did Rabbahu actually get his feet off the ground and actually swim in this pool of water or not? Well, of course, It's obvious that Rabbah Bahu didn't pick up his feet off the ground. In other words, he was just moving his hands around in the water or whatever. It's not him, because we learn in a braisa, lo yoshut adam b'breicha malei ha-mayim, a person is not allowed to swim in a pool full of water, v'afilu emedes b'chaser, even if the pool is in a chaser. Now, if the pool is in Rosh Hashanah or Carmelis, there's even more reason you shouldn't be allowed to swim in there, because there's a good chance that you're going to spritz some water out of the pool, and it's going to end up going fuama, so it's going to end up going from one rishus into the other. But even if it's in the chaser, so there's no problem of that, nevertheless, you're still not allowed to swim in there on Shabbos. So obviously, therefore, Rav Bohu was not swimming on Shabbos. So what's the question? The answer is, like Kasha, there's no contradiction, because had the lesser yidudi, had the isra yidudi. It depends whether the pool of water, whether the body of water has a rim around it or not. So Rashi gives two explanations. The first explanation is that if the pool does not have a rim around it, so then what happens is that when you get closer to the edges, the water is shallower. Like think of when you go into a lake, or when you think of when you go into a lake or to the beach or whatever, you have that the water is deeper in the middle, and then it's shallower towards the edges. So therefore, when you get closer to the edges, Rashi's first explanation is you're more likely at some point you're going to put your feet down on the ground. You're going to end up digging into the ground with your feet, and then you're dissolving some of the dirt into the water. So then it becomes similar to the malacha of megabo, of kneading materials together, which we touched on before. So that's Rashi's first explanation. So as opposed to, for example, if you're talking about, let's say, a swimming pool where it's the same depth all around, then you wouldn't have an issue. That's Rashi's first explanation. The second explanation of Rashi is that if the thing has a lip around it, like, for example, a swimming pool, then it doesn't look similar to a river, then it looks similar to a keli, and then the whole Isser d'Rabbanan of swimming on Shabbos would be only in a river or something like that, where you're more likely to, it's deep, and therefore you're more likely to want to make a flotation device, as opposed to if you're in a pool. So therefore, the point is, in other words, that in a river or a lake or something like that, it would be usur to swim on Shabbos because of the Gzeira that I've gone on about that you might make a flotation device. But if you're in a pool or something like that, which has a lip around it, then according to the two explanations in Rashi, you would be allowed to swim in it on Shabbos, technically, again, assuming it's cold water. So therefore, the question is, so the Gzeira is saying, I'm not sure I saw Rav Bohu in such a body of water on Shabbos and pool on Shabbos, but I don't know whether he was actually swimming or not. In other words, I don't know whether he held that the gzeira applies to a pool as well. La halacha in Shulchan Aruch says technically it doesn't. So technically you would be allowed to swim in a pool on Shabbos. But again, the minhag nowadays, as brought already in Shulchan Aruch, is that we don't swim or bathe at all on Shabbos, either in hot water or in cold water.
Just because of the flotation device danger?
Well, the flotation device, again, we're saying in the Gemara over here is not really an issue if you're in a pool. But no, the reason is because there are other problems if you go in water on Shabbos. Again, you have the problem that if it's in Rosh Hashanah or Carmelis, then you have the problem of that if you walk 4 amos with the water still on your skin, then you'd be carrying that water on Shabbos, and so you'd have to dry yourself off right by the bank of the river, which is not always easy to remember to do. Second of all, even if you don't have that issue, let's say it's in a place with an Eruv, you also have an issue when you dry yourself, you're likely to squeeze out your hair, which is also on Shabbos. So because of those kinds of things, because it's hard to remember to be careful about such things, therefore the Ramah mentions in Shulchan Aruch that the minhag is not to bathe, not to go into water on Shabbos at all. Again, a mikveh, we're saying, for those who go to the mikveh every day, for us who go to the mikveh every day, then that's an exception. But other than that, yeah.
Is there a difference of Shabbos and Yom Tov?
No. Well, yes and no. I mean, as far as this business of bathing on Yom Tov, there's more of you are allowed to use on Yom Tov, we discussed before, you're allowed to use water that was heated up before Yom Tov to wash yourself. If it was heated up on Yom Tov, then you can only bathe pun of Yad Vardaglov in it. As opposed to Shabbos, even if it was heated up before Shabbos, then you still have the Xeris that we're saying over here. But for the most, for
because
the most part,
because we said the hot water is mainly only for tzarchei achila, but not for
oichol nefesh. And oichol nefesh, for that definition, is davar hashava l'chol nefesh. Only something that most people do, and at least as far as halacha is concerned, most people don't regularly bathe in hot their whole body in hot water.
Technically, are you allowed to take a shower?
So that's what we were discussing before. That a shower, we discussed before about the lishtafis. So we said we had a three-way machlokes tanoim. We said the halacha was hot water is osur, cold water is technically mutter. But again, the according to what the Ramah says, even we don't do even in cold water. I think there are poskim achronim who say that, especially nowadays, where it's more common for people to shower more regularly. I think there are maybe poskim achronim who say that maybe, you know, let's say you have like a, you know, 3-day yom tov or something, and you're feeling really uncomfortable, then you can rinse off. You can rinse off quickly in a shower or something like that, but not use soap or whatever. But yeah. All right, let's go on. The Amar Rav Zeira says, here's another thing. Speaking of bathing on Shabbos, Ano Chazise Rav Abahu. Rav Zeira says, I saw Rav Abahu. Sheniach Yodav Kneged Ponav Shalmasa. When he was bathing, so they would go, you know, so again, he's going into this pool or whatever, and in those days, they didn't wear bathing suits. So he put his hand in front of his lower face, in front of his genitals, to cover himself with knees. V'lo yadayna in noga iloy noga. However, Rav Zeira says, I don't know whether Rav Abahu actually put his hand close enough to touch himself or not, or if he held it further out. So Gemara says, again, pshita d'loy noga. Obviously, Rav Abahu couldn't possibly have put his hand close enough to touch his aver, the Tanya, because we learn in a braisa. We learned in Nida. Rav Eliezer omer, kol ha'oichos ba'amo umashkin. Rav Eliezer said that if a man holds on to his organ and urinates, ke'ilu maybe marble lo, because if he's bringing a marble to the world, because it causes him to get stimulated and can cause him to be moti zera levatola, and that was actually one of the averis, the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin, that was one of the averis that caused the marble in the first place. But obviously, you're not allowed to touch your aver. So obviously, okay, Tosis points out, but Chachamim, they disagreed because, okay, you have to hold it up a little bit because otherwise drops of urine are going to get all over your legs, whatever. The point is that even the Chachamim agree that you can't just touch it for no particular reason. So obviously, if there's a choice between holding his hand closer to it or further away, obviously he's going to hold it a little bit further away. What's your Zeira's question? The answer is, I'm going to buy it after Urkibay Lesha. The answer is, Abaya says, because maybe you could compare this case to the case of a Berleshes. A Berleshes is an army unit that goes into a city and starts looking in people's houses to see what kind of things they can find. So, it's not, we learn in a Mishnah in Avodah Zarah. Berleshes Shenichnas Al-Ir, if you have an army unit like that of Goyim that came into a city, and what happens? They start going into everybody's houses to see what they can take that the government wants or that they themselves want or whatever. So if they go into a Jewish house, Bish'as Shalom, if it's peacetime, now it's peacetime, in other words, Rashi says that it's an army of the it's an army of the government that you're living under. So in other words, for example, let's say for us, it would be the United States Army. We're not talking about a foreign army invading. We're talking about an army of the same country that you live in. And it's peacetime, so they're not worried that anybody is going to attack them. The din is chavius sukkos, any open barrels of wine asuros are asur, because the soldiers may have opened them up and drunk from them or done nisuch with them or whatever, and therefore they'd be asur. Stumos mutaris, but sealed barrels are mutar, because obviously they didn't get to those. But here's the key point: b'sha'as mochama, if this takes place during wartime. So if you have a foreign army invading, or even if it's an army of the same country, but it's during wartime, and at any moment they may be attacked, elu ve'elu mutaris. The Mishnah says over there, both kinds of barrels are mutar, even the ones that are open. Lefi she'en p'nai l'nasich, because the soldiers in that case have no time to do nisuch because they're too busy. They want to get out of there as fast as possible and be ready against their enemies. Which means, Alma, so we see from that, Kivan de Be'isi, since they are afraid, Loy Manasi. They're not going to do Nisuch because they don't have the time. They don't have the time, and they don't have the mental. They don't have the headspace right then to be doing Nisuch when they're worried about that the battle is going on. So Hachanami. So the same thing over here. You could argue, given the voice, that since Rav Abahu is afraid, now here actually I said it wrongly before. I said we're still talking about the pool. We're not talking about a pool over here. The Gemara is going to say in a second, here we're talking about a river. So we're talking about that this was on a weekday, so now we're not dealing with Hilchos Shabbos right now. Now we're just dealing with the Halachos of Tznius. And then, so we're saying it was on a weekday, but because he's afraid, loy osi lehuhuri. You could argue that even if he places his hand such that he touches his aver, that he's not going to have hirhur because he's worried, he's afraid. And the Gemara says, "V'hacha mai b'yisusa." What is the fear that he would have over here that would say would prevent him from having hirhur? The answer is b'yisusa denara. He'd be afraid because it's the river. He might drown in the river because the current might be strong. So therefore, Rav Zera says, so I'm not sure if Rav Abahu figured that in that case, it's okay even if he does touch his Aver, because it's the kind of situation where he's not going to have any headspace to start having Hirhurim because he's worried about not drowning in the river. Or do we say that even in that case, you have to be careful and he would have to avoid touching his Aver? Okay. So the Gemara asks on the basic premise, you're telling me at any rate that Rav Abahu did use his hand to cover himself. The question is, Aini, is that so, that you're supposed to cover yourself in that situation? But Amar of Abba, Amar of Huna, Amar Rav, just the opposite. That Kolamaniach Yodav Keneged Panav Shalmata, if a person, when he's going and bathing in the river or whatever, if he puts his hand over his genitals, it's as if he's denying the bris of Avraham Avinu, because it's like he's showing that he's embarrassed of his bris milah, and he wants to cover it. So you're doctor not supposed to cover it. So what is Rav Abahu doing covering it with his hand b'chlal? So the answer is, the Gemara says, loy kasha, there's no contradiction. Ha ki nochis, ha ki solik. One is talking about when he's going down to the river, and one is talking about when he's coming back up from the river. Namely, when he's going down, he's facing away from people, because everybody else is on the riverbank. So then there's no reason for him to be covering his aver, because the people are not going to be seeing it anyway. Therefore, if he's covering it at that point, it amounts to saying that he's embarrassed of his bismillah. Hawk, he's solid, but when he's coming out of the river, then he should be seeing a stick, and then he should cover it. And the Gemara gives other examples. Ki ha, as we have the example, the Rava Shachi, Rava would do a different thing. When Rava was coming out, when Rava was doing the same thing, when he was coming out of the river after bathing in there, and again, he wasn't wearing a bathing suit. So instead of putting his hand over there, Shachi, he would bend over. He would bend over so that his aver is tucked between is tucked away, and therefore nobody sees it. And therefore, so the same idea. In other words, so we see he wouldn't do that when he's going down to the river, because again, to do that when he's going down to the river would amount to saying that he's embarrassed of his bris milah, and you can't do that. But when he's coming out of the river, so he didn't want to use his hand like Rav Abahu did, because after all, there was still the possibility that he might touch it, and there's a question whether he should be doing that or not. But like this, he would bend down, and that way he's still covering that part when he's coming out.
Why isn't he embarrassed when he goes down to the river, and he could be embarrassed when he goes out of the river?
That's what we just said, because when he's going down to the river, he's facing away from people.
Not necessarily. Some people can come back from the river.
That's fine, but the people who are in the river are currently busy swimming or bathing over there. They're not looking at him. So therefore, as opposed to, you have people on the riverbank who are there. You have the other people who have not gone in yet, who have already come out. You have people, you have passers-by, whatever. So therefore, you have more reason to cover yourself when you're coming out. So again, we're saying Rav Abahu would use his hand for the purpose. Rava, instead of using his hand, would just bend over. Again, we're talking about when he's coming out, not when he's going into the river. Rav Zera Zokif.
And what about, do you apply that to a mikveh?
The pashtus, by maybe, I don't know. I mean, by mikveh, every, no, I guess the difference is by mikveh, everybody there is undressed anyway. So therefore, I don't think that's...
And also, it's all males here.
It's, well, that's true also. When you're by the riverbank, you might have women passing by. That's a good point.
No, obviously, if there's women, we're not talking about that. We're talking about...
No. One second. We're talking about
just men.
No. But we're talking about a river. It's a public area. People can be passing by there all the time. So, yeah, that's a fair point. No, when you have the pastures and a mikvah, I've never seen anybody cover themselves when they come out of the mikvah. The pastures, because there's no need to, because everybody there is undressed anyway. Anyway, Reb Zera Zokif, Reb Zera, when he would come out, when Reb Zera would go both in and out, straight up and down, because again, he was concerned about the thing of not looking like he's denying the bris of Avraham Avinu, and he held there's no difference between going in or going out. Rabbanon, Drei Rav Ashi, the Rabbanon of the Yeshiva of Rav Ashi, they would do, like we said before, that there's a difference between going in and going out. Kikonachti, when they were going down to the river Zakti, they would stand straight up, because then there's nothing to cover. Kikasalki, when they were coming out of the river Shochi, then they would bend over like Rav did. Okay. Another story about bathhouses, Rav Zera have a kamishtamit midir of Yehuda. Rav Zera, I don't know if this is the same Rav Zera as before, there's more than one Rav Zera in Chas, but anyway, Rav Zera was trying to avoid Rav Yehuda. Gibboi l'meisek l'arid Yisrael. Rav Zera wanted to go up to Eretz Yisrael, he wanted to move from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, and the reason why he was avoiding Rav Yehuda, because he didn't want Rav Yehuda to tell him not to go. Now, why would Rabbi Yehuda tell him not to go? The Amr Rabbi Yehuda kala ola bivava la'etzol over the etzah. Rabbi Yehuda said, we learned this in brachas as well, that if a person moves from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, he's over on an etzah. Shenema, because you have a pasuk in Yirmiyah, Bavela yuvahu, they will be brought to Babel, the shama yihu, and there they shall remain until the pasuk says, until Hashem says, until I remember them and take them out of the gullus there. So Rabbi Yehuda held that. Now, in context, the pasuk is talking about the kalim of the Beit Mikdash, that were brought to Babel by Nebuchadnezzar, that they're going to remain there until Hashem decides that it's time for the Beit Mikdash to be rebuilt. However, Rabbi Yehuda understood it to also be referring to the Jewish people. Therefore, they're not allowed to leave Babel without Hashem's permission. So Rabbi Yehuda held that if you do that, you're over on an Esther. So therefore, so again, Rabbi Zera wanted to move to Eretz Yisrael, but he didn't want Rabbi Yehuda to tell him not to go. So Omar, but Rabbi Zera says to himself, and we learned this in Brachas as well, a similar thing. Ezo v'eshma minen Yosa, first, before I leave, let me go and hear something from Rabbi Yehuda, hear some vort in Torah from him, the Esi, the Esak, and then I will leave and I will go up to Eretz Yisrael. Also, Ashtechei Beit Boni, so he went, Jekoi Beit Boni, he went and found Rabbi Yehuda was standing in the bathhouse, the Ka'omale L'Shameh, and he heard Rabbi Yehuda saying to his servant, Havili Neser, bring me Neser, which is a kind of cleaning stuff that they used in those days, similar to soap. Rashi says in particular to scrub my head with. Havil Masrik. He also says to the Havili Masrik, bring me a comb. And then those two things he said in Lashon Kodesh. And then he continued in Aramaic, Pishu Kumaihu. Open up your mouth, va'apiku hevla, and let the hot air come out. In other words, Rashi says that it means let the hot air of the bathhouse come in, and that way the hot, stale air inside your body will come out. And also he tells them, v'ishtu mimaya, the bay bunny, also he tells them, drink some of the water of the bathhouse. Not obviously the water that you bathed in, but some of the hot water that's there in the bathhouse, because it's good for you. So those were the four things he said. Amr Rav Zera, il molei leibasi ela l'shmaya davazeh dayi. So Rav Zera says, if I had only come to hear these things that Rabbi Yehuda is saying, it would have been enough for me, because from these statements of Rabbi Yehuda, we can learn important halachas and important things about health. So the question is, what can we learn from them? Bishlema haviyu nefer haviyu masrit. This, the first two things that he said in Lashon Kodesh, bring me Neser and bring me a comb, we can learn from that, as he said before, Dvarim Shok Kamash Malon, Dvarim Shok Chol Mutal Oimim V'Lashon Kodesh. We learn from that what we said before, that things, that mundane matters, you're allowed to say in Lashon Kodesh in the bathhouse. Because we see that Rabbi Yehuda is speaking in Lashon Kodesh and telling them to bring him shampoo and bring him a comb. So we can learn that halacha from that, that you're allowed to say things in Lashon Kodesh in the bathhouse, even that as long as they're not Torah things. And pikhu pumaychu v'apikhu hevla, this that he tells them, open up your mouth and let the hot air come out from inside you and let the hot air from the bathhouse come in. In other words, the hot air from the bathhouse will help get out the hot air and the sweat and whatever from your body. Nami, also we learn some from that. Kiddush Shmuel, like what Shmuel said, the Amar Shmuel, havla mafik hevla, because Shmuel said exactly that. Heat takes out heat. So therefore, in other words, yes, so if you let in the heat of the bathhouse, it'll help get out the extra heat in your body. That shouldn't be there. So therefore, yeah, we can learn that also from what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. Ela ishtu maya debay boni, but when he tells them drink some of the water, some of the hot water in the bathhouse, my mayus, so what's so important about drinking that hot water? And what is your data saying? I'm so impressed. I'm so glad I came and heard that. The answer is Tanya. We learn in a braisa. Achal v'lo shota, if a person eats and does not drink, achilosei dam, then his eating is blood. V'zehu tchilas chole me'ayim, that's the beginning of a stomachache. In other words, you have to drink with your food. The drink helps the food be able to accomplish what it's supposed to in your body. There are a number of places actually in Chassidus where it talks about, including in Hemshech Ayin Beis and in various Sichos of the Rebbe and everything, and other places where it talks about a deeper meaning of that also, besides the simple meaning about drinking together with your food, it also includes the idea. So what's the idea? In other words, if you eat food and you don't drink with it, so now you have all the nutrients and whatever that are supposed to come from your food, but they don't have a way of getting to where they're going in your body because the water helps bring them, the water mixes with your blood and helps bring your bloodstream, bring them all over the place where they need to be in your body. So in the same way, it talks about, in all these places in Chassidus, it talks about that's the importance of halachas in particular, that we're not just learning something and it stays just somewhere up there in our head, but it actually comes out in practice. It refers to Torah Shabbat Peh. It refers to, you learn these things and they just remain theoretical, like the equivalent of eating something that just remains there somewhere stuck in your body. It has to actually be transported throughout your body through the water, which represents which represents learning Torah and learning Torah Shabbat Peh and so forth. He continues the Gemara. Ochal v'loy holach dalad amis. If a person eats and afterwards walk for amis, achilosei marketef, his food will spoil in his stomach. In other words, it won't get properly digested. And that's the beginning of bad breath. It's from incompletely digested food like that. The Braisa continues, Hanisrach in the cob of the ochal, if a person has to go to the bathroom and instead of going first, he eats instead. It's like firing up an oven when you still have a pile of ashes over there, which is not a very effective thing to do because the ashes then absorb most of the heat. This is the beginning of bad body odor. And here's the point, which is why we're bringing it here in the Gemara. Rochat v'chamin v'leshot in the hand. If a person bathes in hot water but does not drink some of that hot water, then it's like an oven that was fired on the outside and not on the inside. In other words, it doesn't do as much good as it would. If you only fire up an oven on the outside, you're not going to be able to bake anything very well on the inside of it. The same way, if the hot water only gets on the outside of your body and not at all on the inside, then it's not doing as much good. So that's the point. That's why Rabbi Yehuda was telling his attendant or other people there in the bathhouse to drink some of the hot water. And one more, a couple more, the Braisa says, and if a person bathes in hot water and does not afterwards rinse himself off in cold water, then it's like iron that was put was in something hot that was put in the fire and then not, was not afterwards put into something cold. Now, when you put metal, we're going to talk about this more extensively in the Gemara in terms of Hilchos Shabbos. We're going to talk about it soon. But if you put metal, or if you put iron or any kind of metal into something hot, when you put something hot inside it or whatever, then it weakens it. And then afterwards, you need to put it, you need to cool it off with something cold in order to strengthen it. So the same way, if a person bathes or showers in hot water and doesn't afterwards rinse off with cold water, then it's, they get weakened from the hot water and they don't strengthen themselves afterwards. The Rambam, by the way, mentions a number of these things in Hilchos Beis. That says all of these things are important things for health. And the last one, rochas v'loisach, if a person bathes in water and does not smear oil on his skin, whether it means before or after, Tosfos discusses that over here. Then it's like water on the outside of a barrel. Again, it doesn't really go inside the same way. In other words, just bathing in water, it just stays on the outside of you. It doesn't really penetrate as opposed to oil penetrates.
So I guess with all these things we learned, Mishan Hativ now.
Well, many of them Mishan Hativ. It's true. For example, I don't know of anybody who, when they take a shower, they make sure to drink a hot drink. So some of them we do say Mishan Hativ. I don't know if necessarily all of them. I mean, for example, the one about after you shower in hot water, that's good to finish off with a little bit of a cold shower. People still do that nowadays. The one about washing and not smearing yourself. Okay, I mean the equivalent nowadays is using soap and shampoo. You don't just wash in water. It doesn't do much good. Yeah.
Right. I guess the thing is our soap and shampoo have oil mixed into it, so you have no reason to do it.
This is also true. Right. Right. I mean, again, all of these things also have deeper meanings as well. We mentioned about the Ochav Leishasa. I mean, there's also, for example, we know in many places Chassidus is compared to oil. So if you just have the water of Torah without the oil of Chassidus, then it just stays on the outside. It doesn't penetrate into where it's supposed to go. Okay, let's continue. The Mishnah says, Mulyar HaGoruf. If you have a Mulyar, which we're going to define in the Gemara what a Mulyar is, if it was cleared out of coals before Shabbos, shoisin hemenu b'Shabbos, then you're allowed to drink hot water from it on Shabbos. Meaning, even though, again, because it had coals in it before Shabbos, the Gemara is going to mention that a mulyar is something that has a container for water and a container for coals. So therefore, what happens is, as long as the coals are in there, it heats up the water, sort of like a samovar. So what happens is, then when you clear out the coals before Shabbos, you still have this residual heat in the container. Nevertheless, you're still allowed to drink from it on Shabbos because Rashi says it's not moistic hevel. It's not adding any more heat to the water. It's just keeping the heat that was there already so that the water doesn't get cold. So that you would be allowed to drink from on Shabbos. On the other hand, an antichi, which we're going to learn in the Gemara two different definitions of it, but it means something that retains the heat much more than ein shoyt af pishu grufa. Even if you cleared out the coals before Shabbos, ein shoyt in henena, you're not allowed to drink the hot water from it on Shabbos. So again, Rashi learns that the reason for the difference is, well, you know, let's learn the Gemara, then we'll talk about the reasons behind this. So the Gemara starts off, heichi damin mulyar hagoruf. What exactly is a mulyar, and what does it mean that it was cleared out of the coals? We learn in a brisa. Mayim, the snim, the gecholim, the bachot. It's a kind of container where you have a receptacle for water on the inside, and then around it, on the outside, you have a place where they put hot coals. So again, as long as the hot coals are in it, then the heat of them gets transferred to the water, and therefore the water heats up. But if you clear out the coals before Shabbos, then you're allowed to drink from the main container. What about antichi? Which the Mishnah had said that an antichi you're not allowed to drink from, even if you cleared out the coals. Rabba on the Bay Kiri. Rabba says that an antichi is where you have, we talked about earlier in the parak, a kira, we talked about a stove which has room to put two pots on top of it. Sometimes you have in the kira, you make a hollow space inside the kira near the area where the coals are, and you put water into there. The difference, so therefore, it is in a certain sense, it is similar to a mulyar because you have one container for water and one container for coals, but because a kira has much thicker walls, it retains the heat much more. Therefore, what happens is you have the water is therefore the water therefore the heat is increasing on Shabbos, and therefore now Rashi is learning over here that the whole problem with the muyor or the antichi is the basic problem of hatmana. Now Rashi said all the way at the beginning of the parak when we started talking about all these dinim of leaving food on the fire before Shabbos, the whole concept of shehiyah. Rashi had said over there that the whole problem with shehiyah, where you haven't swept out the coals, is that it's adding heat on Shabbos, and therefore the problem is it's similar to hatmana, it's similar to insulating food on Shabbos, where we learned before, and we're going to learn again in the fourth parak, that you're not allowed to do that in something that adds heat. So Rashi learns that that's the problem. And therefore, again, the point is that with the moyer, because its walls aren't so thick, therefore it doesn't retain so much heat, so it keeps the water from getting cold, fine, but it doesn't warm it up further, therefore that we mutter, as opposed to the antichi, according to the first definition and according to the second definition that we're going to have here in the Gemara, it retains much more heat even when you swept out the coals, therefore you're not allowed to on Shabbos because it amounts to doing hatmana in something that increases heat. That's Rashi's explanation. Tosfos disagrees with that whole premise. It's not a matter of hatmana. Because you're not really insulating it inside anything. And in general, Tosfos disagrees with the whole premise that shehiyah is related to atmana, that one is also because of the other. So Tosfos instead explains that we're not talking about drinking the water itself. Tosfos says we're talking about using the water to pour into wine. So the problem is, therefore, so if you have a muyar, and you, which again has one container for water and another container for coal, then fine. The water in it is not so hot that if you pour it into the wine, that it'll heat up the wine and cook it on Shabbos. Therefore, that would be allowed. As opposed to with the antichi, because it retains much more heat, the water is going to be much hotter, and therefore you're not allowed to on Shabbos because it's going to heat up the wine and cook it higher than Yad Salah display. That's Tosfos. Then you have a variety of other explanations among Rishonim, what the difference is. The Rambam says it's the difference of whether the water was cooked on Shabbos or not. Anyway, so the first definition of antichi was saying is a little hollow space inside the walls of the kira where you place water in there. And that way it gets heated up by the coals in the kira, in the stove. And again, the problem is that even you cleared out the coal, even if you swept out the coals before Shabbos, which you would have to do in order to leave water on it, nevertheless, it retains so much heat that the water is going to be also on Shabbos, says Rabbah. Rav Nachmitzvah on a Beit Dudi. Rav Nachmitzvah has a different definition. An antichi is a kind of container that has a double bottom. Between the two bottoms, you put coals, and then in the top thing, so unlike a moyer, where you have the water and the coals are next to each other, or the coals are surrounding the water or whatever, here you have the coals are underneath the water in a container of their own. And therefore, so again, it retains a lot of heat, even if you sweep out the coals. So the Gemara says, Manda Amar Beit Judi, Rav Nachmit, who says that it would be also with a double bottom container, Kol Shekein Beit Kiri. He would say how much more so it would be also with a Beit Kiri, because that one retains even more heat, because you have the walls of the Kira themselves are very, very thick. Manda Amar Beit Kiri, whereas Rabbah's definition, that it means this little hollow space inside the stove where you put water, he would say that would be also on Shabbos. Ava Beit Judi Loi, but the one with the double bottom would not be also, because fine, it retains more heat than a moyer maybe, but maybe not so much that it should be also on Shabbos. The Gemara says Tanya Kavaseder of Nachman. We learn a brisa like of Nachman. He took understanding. Antichi Afa Bishop Grufo Ktuma, and Antichi, even if you swept out the coals, or even if you covered them with ashes, and we learned earlier in the parak that usually that would make it allowed to put something on top of it on Shabbos, to leave something on top of it for Shabbos, still ain't shoyt in hemena. You're not allowed to drink from such a thing on Shabbos. Mepneishin chushta mechamamta, because the bottom of it, because the bottom of it makes it stay hot. Rashi mentioned two explanations of nechushta. One is nechushta means it's copper, meaning that an antichi is a copper container, and the copper retains heat very well, and therefore it causes the water to be hot on Shabbos. Or the other explanation, Rashi says in the Chushka, can also mean the bottom of it. In this case, again, it has a thick bottom. It has a double bottom. One part where you put coals, and then above it you put water. And that compartment over there where you put the coals retains heat even if you took out the coals before Shabbos. Okay. So that's that. The Sabbathetic, by the way, talks in this connection, what about taking water from a samovar on Shabbos? The kind of samovar they had in those days, where also there you have a space in them for coals or something, you have similar issues to what you're describing over here. The kind of samovars we have nowadays maybe are not quite the same. The electric samovars or whatever that we have nowadays are maybe not quite the same thing. I mean, you have many of them have on them a Shabbos mode to make sure that they don't reboil after you take out water from them. You need to set the Shabbos mode, but yeah. Mishnah says, Hamecham Shapinohu. If you have a kettle of hot water, that you clear it. Now, the word pinohu can mean one of two possibilities. It can mean that it was on the fire and you removed it from the fire, or it can mean that you emptied out the hot water that was in it. We'll see in the Gemara both possibilities. Anyway, the Mishnah says, well, you're not allowed to put cold water into that kettle, the shvil sheyechamu, in order that they'll warm up, because the kettle is a kliyushin. But you are allowed to put cold water into the kettle or into a cup, where you're putting them in just in order to take off the chill, in order to thaw them a little bit. So the Gemara asks, my karma, what do we mean by hamecham shepinohu? Amar of adabamasna hochi karma, it means like this, hamecham shepinim amenu mayim chamin, it means that if you emptied out the hot water from the kettle, lo yitim l'seicham mayim mu'otim, you're not allowed to put a little bit of cold water in there, kadei sheyechamu, in order for the cold water to warm up, because then you're putting water into a kliyushin, and that would be a problem. Avol noisim l'seicham mayim merubim, but you can put into it a lot of cold water, kadei l'afshiran, in order to warm them up a little bit. In other words, the point is, if you pour in a lot of cold water, it's not going to heat up, because the cold water is going to be cooling off the kettle even as the kettle is trying to warm it up, and all you're going to wind up with is warm water that's not Yad Tzila display, and therefore that would be allowed. So only, you can't put in a little bit, but you can put in a lot. So the question is, Baha'loi Mitzaris, how can you do that on Shabbos? Never mind the question of heating up the water. Don't you have the problem? We just said that after metal is heated up, that weakens it, and you have to put in cold water, or you have to put it in something cold in order to strengthen it. So don't you have the issue that you're doing that on Shabbos? You're pouring in, if you pour in a lot of cold water, in particular, Rashi says, if you're pouring cold water all the way up to the top, then you're causing that now the metal, which became weak from the heat, is now getting strengthened again. And you can't do that on Shabbos. The answer is Reb Shimon. The answer is our Mishnah would be according to Reb Shimon. We learned before that Reb Shimon says if you're doing something not where you're not necessarily intending to do a certain malacha on Shabbos, then it would be allowed to do it even if accidentally that malacha gets done. The point is, in other words, not necessarily are you going to be doing the tzaddik over here. In particular, first of all, not necessarily did the kettle ever get so hot in the first place that it was going that it was weakened. It may also be that it was previously strengthened. So for all those reasons, not necessarily when you're pouring in cold water now, is it going to actually strengthen it. So that would be, it's called a suffix sick ratio l'sha'avar. It's talking about a suffix retroactively, was there a sick ratio, and such a thing is allowed. So therefore, so the question was that it might come to Mitzadah, and the answer is not necessarily. Is it going to? And the Shimon says, if it's not necessarily going to, then it's allowed. Maskif la Abaya, however, Abaya asks on that explanation, midi mecham shepinim amenim mayim katani. After all, the Mishnah didn't use the word that you emptied out the kettle from the hot water, which would imply, in other words, that you poured out the hot water from it. Mecham shepinim katani. The wording in the Mishnah is the kettle that you cleared, which sounds like you cleared it, you took it off the fire. So therefore, El Amar Abaya Hachikama. So Abaye says, actually, we have to understand the Mishnah differently. Not like from Adav Amasna that it depends on the amount of water you're pouring in, but rather, Hamecham Shepino, if you took the kettle off the fire, the Yesh Boi Mayim Chamin, so not like from Adav Amasna's explanation that you emptied out the hot water from it, now you're talking about whether you're allowed to put cold water into the kettle. We're talking about you took it off the fire, there's still hot water in it. The yesh by mayim chamin, lo yitem osechem mayim mu'otim v'shvil sheyechomu. You're not allowed to put into it a little bit of cold water in order for the cold water to heat up from the existing hot water in there, because that would be cooking on Shabbos. Avol noisem osechem mayim merubin kedei lafshirum, but you would be allowed to put in there a lot of cold water in order to cool it off, in order to warm it up a little bit, because again, if you pour in a lot of cold water, if you pour in a lot of cold water all at once, then by the time the hot water is going to be able to heat it up, the Yad Seladis Bo, the cold water will have already cooled it off, and the whole thing is not going to be Yad Seladis Bo anymore. So that would be allowed. But Abaye says, Umecham Shepinu Mimenu Mayim, but if you pour out the water from the kettle, Lo Yitim Sechem Mayim Kol Iker, then you're not allowed to pour water into it at all, Mitnashim Mitzaris, because then the Mishnah is implying that then you would not be allowed to, because then you're strengthening the metal by pouring in cold water. And therefore, Abaye says, but Rabbi Yehuda, he, therefore, our Mishnah would have to be, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Da'amad Dava She'enim Eskavin Osir, who says that even if you're not intending to do the Malacha, it's still Osir, and in this case, you might be doing the Tzaris, and that would be Osir. So according to Abaye, it's exactly the opposite of Rav Adav Amasna. The Mishnah is not according to the Bishimon. The Mishnah is according to the Yehuda. We're not talking about pouring water into an empty kettle. That would be also either way, because forget about the question of whether you're heating up the water. A lot of cold water in there at once is not going to get heated up, but it is going to cause the metal to be strengthened by the cold water going in there after the hot water, and that would be also. What the Mishnah is saying, is talking about, is putting in water into the, pouring more water into the existing water in the kettle, that if you're putting in only a little bit of cold water, it would be also, because you're going to be cooking it. And if you pour in a lot of cold water all at once, then it would be mutter, because the whole thing is not going to reach Yad Seladis Bo. Okay. Okay. So we'll stop over here. We'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.
Now, in a keli cheres that's boiling on Shabbos, can you drop some cold water?
Again, what we're saying, well, so a keli cheres is not really the matter of mitzaris so much, because keli cheres doesn't get so weakened by the heat. So maybe you don't have the matter of mitzaris there. A mecham that we're talking about over here is usually a kettle, is usually made out of metal. But so maybe you don't have the matter of mitzaris, but if you put in a little bit of cold water, you still have the problem that you're cooking it. Again, if it's a kli rishon, then you have a problem. If it's a kli sheni, then there's no issue, because we said before, water is not one of the kali abishal. It's not one of the things that cooks so easily.
Cooking by pouring cold water?
If you pour cold water into hot water, then it becomes hot, right? That's the thing. If you pour in a
little bit of cold. No, it becomes cold.
Well, that's the thing. That's the difference. That Rav Adav Amasna is saying, that there's a and actually Abaye is saying, because we're talking about pouring it into water that's there already, that if you're pouring in a little bit of cold water, then that would be a problem, because then that little bit of cold water is going to get cooked from the existing hot water. It's all going to heat up to more than the absolutist place. Whereas if you pour in a lot of cold water, then no, there'd be no issue, because then the whole thing is not going to reach the absolutist place.
Okay, that's what I'm asking. A lot of hot water.
That's it, right. So there's a difference between a lot of cold water. That's what Abaye is saying. There's a difference between putting in a little cold water versus a lot of cold water. But Abaye is saying to put in into an empty kettle to put in cold water, that would be also either way because of the mitzaris. Again, Rashi would learn actually that would only be if you filled it up to the rim. Rashi learns it's not mitzaris unless you fill it all the way up to the top. Tosfos has a long discussion over here that not necessarily actually. It might even be, even if you put in less than up to the rim, that might be enough to be mitzaris.
In these days, right, they make it metal utensils. It's once you use it, it's done. It doesn't get stronger every time you add cold water to it. But you know, at least
that
maybe years back.
That's the point. In other words, that's why if someone's Rav Adav Amasna, when Rav Adav Amasna was saying that our Mishnah goes like Rav Shimon, Dovah She'enim Eskavin Mutter, that's the thing, because Rav Shimon would say one consideration is not necessarily this pot, this kettle, whatever, could have already been strengthened previously, not necessarily if it's the first time that it was ever heated up and then cooled down, and therefore you now adding cold water to it is not necessarily strengthening it any more than it would have been before. Another consideration is also not necessarily this time that it reached the kind of temperature where it was going to be weakened anyway. Yeah, it has to reach a certain temperature in order to do that.
Right. But in a crock pot that's made of earthenware, you could put a majority, if there is water and you pour a majority of water, cold water, while the crock pot is hot on Shabbos, it wouldn't be bitchel.
Well, I mean, is the crock pot still on? I mean, if it is, then eventually the water is going to get there to Yad Zeledis, then you have a problem. If the crock pot's off, then you're fine, but usually a crock pot stays on all Shabbos, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, there you go, then you have a problem. As long as the crock pot is on, it's called Klirish and Alva H, then for sure you can't pour anything into it, because whatever you pour into it is eventually going to heat up to Yad Zeledis.
No, but if you do it, let's say, 5 minutes before Shabbos ends.
Doesn't matter. We talked about the other day, we talked about a point of Rashi, we said you could put something, let's say, near a fire, as long as you remove it from there before it reaches Yad Zeledis. We said other Rishonim disagree with that explanation and said that, no, you can only put it in a place where, to begin with, it never could reach Yad Zeledis, no matter how long you left it there. 5 minutes before Shabbos, fine. The water is not going to have enough time to get to Yad Zeledis by maybe, but if you were to leave it there long enough, it would. That could be an issue. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, everyone.